Mr. Haig, reel 12.
And how did you feel about the beginning of war then? I mean, given that you had been trying to think of getting out, what did you think about when war was declared? What?
Well, actually, you didn't think much, because we all thought like there was going to be one glorious bang and that was it. Of course, and you had no idea in those blooming old cruisers within 9.2 that, well, you know, if you fired the damn things, I mean, you don't know what would have happened.
How well prepared for the war was the Navy, in your view, and your experience, anyway?
Well, the Navy that was properly manned was pretty well prepared. Though, of course, they had no idea how it was, what it was going to be like. See, they was well trained. But then again, I mean, so you've got some ships that were damn good at gunnery, some that weren't, some blooming not. Here, I mean, so you get some with old-fashioned stuff and no good, where the Germans had kept all that up to date. Of course, we didn't know that. So it was going to be one glorious bang and that was it. Of course, they've been so used to this, naval officers, blarney, like we're the great I ams, no one dared hurt us. But you really thought you was impregnable, I mean, so.
What changes in routine, I mean, that you remember best? What were the ones from peacetime to war routine,
well,
that you remember especially?
All the ship's company was put watchkeeping for a start. That made a big difference. Them sand scratchers who used to pack up at 4 o'clock in the evening suddenly found out they scrubbed decks when they were there and they went on watch. And of course, I mean, say, it meant to say that when you come into cold ship, then again, I mean, say, some people were lucky, they cold shipping nearly all their time on deck, and others, it was their watch below. Same with in the Drake, when we used to do your watch, perhaps you'd be on perhaps midnight or 12 to 4 in the morning. Just as you was thinking of going off, you'd sight a blooming ship, and they'd decide to board. Well, it was just your luck. You went. And time you come back again, I mean, say, best part of your time off is gone. You come on again.
What about the routine of work for the signalman? How did that change with you being at war?
Well, I mean, say, it didn't change much, because you was watchkeeping just the same, only because instead of in 4 watches, you was bunged in 3.
And you made the point earlier about HO ratings, about the people.
Well, we never had any in the Drake,
yeah,
or the Good Hope. It was all Fleet Reserves.
Yeah. So you didn't do much to do with HO ratings in there?
Not then.
What
no.
about other ships in the Swift?
Well, we had a couple in the Swift. We had a couple of signal ratings, HO, in the Swift. And, of course, no, 3 actually. One of them was useless. He was seasick at the buoy in Dover Harbour. And he used to say to me, Doug, he says, will you oblige me by going down and drinking my tot? He hadn't got the words out of his mouth while I was down there and drunk it. I'd always oblige him. But he left the ship, you know, went sick through seasickness, left the ship. Next time I see him, he was a lieutenant writer, pay bob.
Did you find that these men made any impression on the Navy at all, the HO ratings?
Well, a lot of them, I wish, were disgusted until they got settled into it.
Disgusted by the conditions you had to put up with, and they had to put up with. Because there would be men in the Navy now who would never have thought of being in it before.
Definitely. I mean,
do you think these men actually did anything to change the traditions and the services?
No, the condition. No, the Navy tried to change them.
Yeah.
The Navy changed them to suit the Navy.
Not, there was no impulse from inside.
No.
If you could see.
No, they had to conform. 9 times out of 10, one of the lead men or something like that took most of them on, you know, and gradually broke them into the proper routine.
Yes. And 2 more things about the war. One, was the you were with Roger Keyes, the Dover Patrol, for most of the
Well, actually, Roger Bacon was when we went round to Dover, he was. Roger Keyes relieved him. Oh. And, of course, Roger, we had Lizzie Bradley Larks with him. And then, I don't know where he went to, but all the Dover Patrol went up and joined up the Grand Fleet after Z. Bradley fell.
What did you remember about the Dover Patrol? Do you remember any, apart from the Vindictive and that incident in there?
Oh, I mean, say, there was always something round there.
Tell me about one or two incidents.
Well, I mean, say, for a start, we commissioned early in October 16, and I think the 26th was our first lot. We was over Dunkirk, and every night you used to get a signal code word come through, always began with an N, and nine times out of ten it was just a transport due so and so and so and so passing through. But on the 26th or 25th of October, one come through Norpius, assumed battle stations. Well, of course, I mean, say, we've been so used to these, what names, that the telegraphist who got it, turned around, he kept it some time, and then he turned around and he says, I've got one of them messages. So, come up. Oh, the gunner was on watch. Oh, Sigmund, I forget, I wasn't on watch, but the Sigmund on watch turned around and said to him, he said, oh, look, we've got one of them messages, Norblius. The gunner turned on, he said, I don't think it's much. And then, presently, all the rest of the ships got underway and went off. And the cruiser attendant flashed up, and I'd just taken over. He said, why aren't you underway? I said, why aren't we underway? I said to the gunner, I said, what's happened then? He said, nothing. He said, we ain't seen no signal. He said, all we had was this signal, Norblius. I said, well, give us it. So I went down to the captain. I said, we've had a signal Norblius, sir. I said, and all the ships have got underway. I said, and the attendant just asked us, why we ain't underway? He said, tell the gunner, he said, up anchor. He said, tell the engine room full speed. And of course, it was this take-up battle station. We got up there, of course, it was a Barney then. The blasted 6-inch gun wasn't trained properly. It wasn't weighted, the gun shield wasn't weighted down properly. We had to have blokes in there pushing it round by the muzzle.
But that was a failure, then, that the signalling was just someone in the habit of putting things away.
Yeah.
Didn't notice that this one was coming through.
Yeah, we're so used to these N words coming through that meant nothing, just to transport so and so and so and so. They took it for granted. Of course, and then this one, I doubt the captain would have took any notice if he'd been up there. But of course, as he wasn't up there, he was in full power to take all necessary action.
What was the outcome of this for the people in charge? For people?
Well, let me say, I know the signalman got 14 days number 10. I know that. But of course, the gunner got a severe dressing down. But of course, let me say, there was nothing said because... We see, time we got in there, and, we missed all the action, but the simple reason, by the time we got there, everyone was either hit or missed.
And in 1919, you were in Russia.
Yeah.
The Bolshevik uprising.
But before that, we had the surrender of the Grand Fleet, German Fleet.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, I was in the Swift then, and we was detached from the Grand Fleet. We went on this submarine business. What they done, they used to get all the messages of submarine reports, see, and plot their chart, plot them on the chart, their course and all that lot, and where more or less they cross. Then they go out with all the net drifters and they put mine nets right round this circle, see, and just leave a gap for them to come in. And when they thought they'd got someone in there, the drifters used to go in there and do a gridiron depth charge attack, see, both ways. And then the destroyers would go in and polish them off like that. Well, that was our job. The joke is, the bloke in charge of it was the bloke who was captain of St. Vincent. He took over just before the war. You know, just before I left the St. Vincent. And he was this captain up there. Anyhow, when the when the armistice was signed, we was round Dundee on this lark again. And of course he was collecting his troops, and then when the German fleet surrendered, we went out and we shot in between our fleet and the Germans, much to beat his annoyance. Get to Hill, this actual signal we was, get to Hill out of it.
And I say, in 1919, in the Swift...
Yes, you went to Russia in the Glory.
Yeah, well, not in the Glory, no. She was up there. I went up the Glory.
What did you find there, and what did you find about it?
Well, actually, I wasn't in the Glory long before they bunged me in the Ladus with the Admiral, and went Admiral Staff round to Archangel. And...
But the sailors and yourself, you were pretty cheesed off for this.
Well, yes, I mean, so we'd had the basin of war, hadn't we? We didn't want another whack. I say, everybody was a bit fly-blown. Of course, peace hadn't been signed. And, as I say, we went round to Archangel, and, of course, the Bolsheviks and the White Russians were arguing the point.
And people didn't feel strongly about this campaign and didn't want to be here?
Well, actually, they didn't want to be there, but don't forget, they were so scattered up there, they couldn't do anything about it. I mean, see, you weren't as if you had a fleet there. You had one ship at Archangel and another one round at Murmansk and one somewhere else.
Was there talk among the men of any descent?
No, all of them said, oh, let's go home out of it. Let's get home out of it.
There was no feeling of identifying with the Bolsheviks,
no.
Really?
Oh, no.
They didn't know. I mean, did they understand what was happening?
Well, they knew that we was fighting the Bolsheviks. That was it and all about it.
Yeah, the Bolsheviks. Mm. Yeah. No one told them what the war was about.
No, it was just... just a war.
And you'd already had 4 years war and not anymore. Just a couple of things, Mr. Haig, which I wanted to tell you. One was that you never spent much time in the barracks.
No, in England.
Any time in your career.
No, the most I spent there one time was a couple of months when I was doing a course for yeoman.
How did you find the life in the barracks and compare the life on board ship? Was it...
Well, of course, entirely different. See, I mean, say... of course, you still had your hammocks and your mess. But the barracks was entirely different, I mean, say... The only thing, when I first went to the barracks, you had this... still getting over the effects of on-the-knee dogs. And...
On the knee dogs. Tell me about that.
Oh, that was the mutiny in Pompey Barracks way back in the murky gloom. And it used to be an order then that when the officer wanted to address the ship's company or a lot, they used to get down on one knee. Well, apparently, Lieutenant Collett, I think his name was the officer of watch, and he was got some men under punishment. And it been raining, wet, and he turned around on the knee dogs, and the dogs didn't get on the knee. It was a riot, and of course that's why that sheet iron's round the barrack gate now, so people can't see the people under punishment. Yeah, and they used to have to run across the parade always, whether you had a bag and hammock or not, and you was restricted to 2 pints of beer a night.